Hey, welcome to Divergent Paths. I am the host, Dan Dunford, and if you're listening, thank you. You're a delightful person. Need some positivity. So, smile, or whatever it is you do when you're happy. I hope you're enjoying your day, or evening, or afternoon, whenever it is you're listening to this. Really excited to be back in the saddle. I said I was going to be back doing it every week, and it, you know, didn't end up being every week, but we're getting closer to every week now. I'm starting to kind of figure some stuff out and figure out how to work things a little bit better again. And so here we are. Thanks for listening. And I hope I can bring you some modicum of interest and joy in a world that's becoming increasingly difficult to deal with. So this week, this is an interview I taped back in October, I believe, of last year, with composer Alex Weston. And we get into it a little bit in the interview, but Alex is someone that several previous guests, including Ben Brody and Salome Scheidegger, both kind of turned me on to, and I got in touch with him, and we had a wonderful time talking. And he's a wonderful composer, has done a lot of work on, you know, several aspects of music that I was a little bit less familiar with. He writes, you know, chamber music and piano solo music and all sorts of music, in addition to having worked as a composer on the Showtime drama The Affair, and a number of films as well. So we were able to dive into a lot of that stuff, because I had a lot of questions, of course, because, you know, I've never written music for a TV show or a movie or really anything. I've never written music for anything, so, but we had a good time talking, so I hope you enjoy our chat. And so, at the end of the episode, he sent me a piece called Angles, that I really enjoyed. It's a little bit longer than the ones I usually feature on the end. It's about 11 minutes long, but it's really cool. It's a slow build, but it's worth it. So I hope you listen to the whole thing because it's really enjoyable. If you want to support the podcast, go to iTunes and give it a rating. Or a review. Either way, head over to patreon.com/divergentpathspod. If you have a few extra dollars that you can pledge to help me along my podcasting way, and check it out on Facebook, Divergent Paths with Dan Dunford. I usually also post things about the podcast through my Instagram account, which is at @NYCBassBone. My personal account, of course. Hope you enjoy this. And as always, the intro music is from my friend and previous guest, Katie Geringer, with Slow Down. And so that's it. I hope you enjoy your week. And please enjoy listening to my talk with Alex Weston.
Awesome. All right.
Need a minute?
What?
Need a minute?
No, it's all good. I'm just kind of like, not only, you know, as was I sick in San Francisco, I like came back on the red eye yesterday morning. So I like flew into New York at 6:45 a.m. So I'm still kind of like jet lagged from
from
that, but that's cool.
Are you recording?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Where were you before? You know, where were you vacationing?
I was in Ireland.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, for a week.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I'm finally like recovered from that like lack of sleep.
Yeah, hit like distilleries and breweries.
Yeah. I did the the Guinness distillery, which I think you kind of brewery. I guess is the right word. Which yeah. Kind of have to do, which is weirdly touristy. It was like a Disneyland for beer. You know, like you walk into a room and it's like the most important ingredient is water, and there's just a huge waterfall. It's like that kind of.
That's fun.
Yeah, maybe went to like a more authentic like whiskey distillery. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've always heard that the closer you are to the Guinness brewery, the better the Guinness
that is. True.
Like, because I, you know, Guinness here is fine. Like, I like it fine.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, no, you. If you're in Ireland, like, it's just so much better. Like, but
yeah,
I'm more of a whiskey guy anyway. But
I mean, it is better. It's not like
your favorite.
It's not like life-changingly better, but it is better.
Okay. Well, some people just that's their thing. First off, thanks for sitting down with me.
Of course, yeah. Thanks for reaching out.
That's funny. I mean, in the past 6 months, I don't even remember who the specific people were, but there have been probably five or six people like talking about like working with you or just like being, you know, knowing you and being like, you know, knowing your work. And I was like, well, it happens like that where I'll have a run of guests that just keep talking, like you keep bringing up the same person. I'm like, well, might as well just email that guy.
Yeah, well, and I know you just did, I listened to two episodes getting ready for this. I listened to, Ben Brody, who you've had on like three times.
It was 3 weeks in a row. It was 4 weeks in a row because it was him, the Seven Lovelies, which is the
dance thing.
And then I did a two-parter with Pitch Black, and those like ran for 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of Ben Brody.
Yeah, and then you also, there was like, you did an episode with Salome.
Yeah.
I shot it earlier.
That was really fun. I've done a lot of work with. She's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I wish my life was as cool as yours. But
going to Comic Cons.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's too expensive. Like, those things are like too much for me.
Yeah.
I like what happens at those things, but all the people, like, that, you know, I saw people with pictures from New York Comic Con. I was just like, that's just, I want to do that, but it's just too much. I can't handle that many people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, well, let's just, you know, jump into it, I guess.
All right.
and to any listeners, I apologize for my voice. So let's just, you know, go back and kind of start from the beginning. Like, I mean, you, if, after I, when I was like, just kind of doing a little light background on your career and what you do, I was you know, just browsing your website, your Tumblr. It's Tumblr, right?
Yeah.
Tumblr.
I need a new one.
Yeah. I mean, but it's the thing about Tumblr is it makes like media insertion like easier than anything else.
Yeah.
But anything else is a little more tricky to make it look like a website.
Yeah. But I'm not sure I totally accomplished. Pretending that it was one, but yeah.
But I mean, well, I would say like if you're a composer, the most important thing is your music, and that's all right there. You can, like, without even scrolling down, you can listen to, you know, probably 15 different things. So I mean, from that point of view, like, yeah, I mean,
it works.
It works pretty. It's pretty effective for like, you know, when people are wanting to hear your music, it just makes it really easy. but look, you know, just scrolling past that top 15 or whatever it is, you know, it's just it's such a wide swath of different things.
Yeah.
I mean, because you've got like your stuff from TV, and you got your stuff from film. I mean, which is obviously, you know, comes later. But you know, just like, you know, dozens of pieces, different ensembles, and just I was just really kind of a little bit blown away by just the sheer like breadth of what you do. So I'm just, you know, just kind of to dip our toes in the traditional interview water.
All
right. Like, was that, you know, just the kind of versatility and breadth, was that something that you always had an eye towards, or was it just something that kind of grew out of taking whatever opportunities you were offered?
Well, I find that I work in, and I like to work in a lot of different kinds of mediums and a lot of different things. You know, I have my classical music and I love writing for film, and I also really enjoy like making pop music and producing and doing electronic music and things like that. So it really, I think, is more like interests than a, you know, what's presented itself sort of thing. Mm. And I really feel like it's not quite so disparate, and I don't think you can say, like, you know, now I'm writing pop music or now I'm writing film music or something, because, you know, it's like the like the electronics and things that you do when you're making pop music, and you come to do a film score, and it's you know, all synth pads, and there's
same, a lot of, you know, a lot of the same programs, you know, like actual physical computer programs that you're using.
Yeah, but also just in terms of like timbres and techniques and things like that, and, you know, if you study classical music and you work in classical music, that's inevitably going to find its way into. So yeah, I like to work in these wide, these different mediums, and I also don't think that they need to be like mutually exclusive.
Of course, yeah, that's, and in 2016 even that's even like become unrealistic for them to be like so to be fragmented or disparate if you're trying to make any kind of money. So I mean, let's just background wise, like what kind of started you in the direction of being, you know, a professional, I don't know if you call yourself or would have call yourself a freelance composer. I don't know if that's like the term you use.
I'm not totally freelance. Like, you know, I have a day job too.
Right. But, okay. Of course. I mean, right.
But I started out as a pianist primarily. You know, I started playing classical piano when everybody does when you're, you know, when you're like five. Like everyone takes lessons. So I started taking piano lessons when I was five, and I started playing or focusing really heavily on jazz piano when I was around 11 or 12, and I took that very seriously for a number of years, and actually that was like sort of the goal for a lot of high school, was like, I'm going to be a jazz pianist. And I mean, I don't know, I'm glad that I didn't end up going down that route, and I still love playing jazz, but it's not necessarily, you know, I don't know if I am cut from the cloth to be able to do the, you know, 8-9 hours a day of practicing or whatever you have to do to be at the top of the game. So I actually think going from jazz and that more improvisatory, I'm not sure if that was the right word. Is it improvisational? There we go. Improvisational music, I think, you know, kind of led naturally to composition, and I sort of think I approach composition in a sort of very improvisational way and sort of refined from there. So I sort of got into composing and classical music, back into classical music from jazz in that way. So from there I decided to major in composition.
Yeah, I mean, had you started writing stuff when you were, you know, before you decided to study in it?
I was writing like through high school. I did.
Okay.
You know, even when I was like focusing on playing jazz piano, you know, I wrote, you know, I did a couple, you know, big band pieces that, you know, the high school jazz band played, and I did a bunch of, you know, some string music and a lot of solo piano music, of course, because that's what I'm playing.
Right. So, looking back, I don't know how old you are, but like looking back on that now, like what was that like? I mean, what were those pieces like? I mean, I'm always curious, like, can you go back and, I don't know if you have like recordings of all of these things, but if you go back and look at those things, can you see like, you know, where some of the stuff you do now comes from? I think so.
I mean, I think my jazz band things at the time that I was writing were really like mixed metery and angular and things, which is not really what I do anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but I actually listened maybe last month to like this first string quartet that I wrote that was part of like my college audition package. And and actually some of like my early piano pieces, I definitely think have along a similar strain to my current writing, especially in terms of tonality. And, you know, I started in high school, I really kind of like copped the minimalist thing a lot.
Look, it sounds cool. Like if you listen to minimalist music, like it sounds cool, like from a actual tactical standpoint, like it's, I don't want to say it's easy to do, but you can jump on board with it.
Totally.
You know, like, you know, and make something that sounds cool, you know, even if you're not necessarily super understanding of what you're doing.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, like, to that's what it seems like to me. I don't know. I don't have any composing background, so I, you know.
No, I mean, there's definitely some similarity, but it's, I'm not writing anywhere near the same kind of thing that I am doing now.
Yeah, that,
but I can see the roots to actually answer your question. Yeah. I can see the...
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's interesting. I'm always interested in, like, seeing, like, how just, like, those early glimmers that kind of become, like, how a person looks at their music or looks at their art now, you know. So... I guess. Where'd you go to school? Who'd you study with?
I went to... I only did undergrad.
Okay. Yes. It's the way to do it.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it took me 8 years, but yeah, that's all I ended up with.
I went to Carnegie Mellon.
Okay.
In Pittsburgh, I was going to say, but I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you know that. Yeah, so I went to Carnegie Mellon and then moved to New York promptly afterwards.
I mean, so I guess... From a instrumental musician point of view, like for me, living in New York makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because there's so, you know, I play as a trombone player who, you know, has never bought into only doing one thing, orchestral music. I can do as all this stuff. I mean, even if there's a lot of players in the city, like I usually can scratch together, you know, some money.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of different things. Now, from a compositional point of view, or the point of view as being a composer who wants to write for people, not only that, but also moving to a city that you didn't go to school in, because you know there are a lot of Carnegie Mellon people in New York.
Yeah.
There's a lot of everybody here, so like you know, but you know moving here from somewhere else with you know no root system, how did you like kind of make the decision to come here and like and try to gain a foothold in a way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was pretty much guaranteed that I was going to be in New York.
Right.
Like, you know, there was a minute when I was trying to decide between New York and LA.
Of course.
But I mean, I grew up in New Jersey.
Okay, and, like, that makes sense.
You know, my family's in the area, and also I liked New York better. I went to LA to check it out after graduation and decided that this was the right place. I mean, really, I think those are the two. Places. I mean,
sure.
I mean, it wasn't a hard decision to come here, but you know, it is hard to figure out how you're going to go about getting your footing and doing something like that. And
because I mean, there's a even though it's different for everyone, there's a path for instrumentalists. Like, there's a way to break into it. But is there something you know comparable for young composers?
What I did was I reached out to like every alumni I could in the city.
Okay.
You know, everyone I knew, even they weren't. I met a couple composers that way, who were here that went to Carnegie Mellon, but you know, many years before I got there, and just a lot of instrumentalists, and just, I just made a point to go to like as many shows as I could, talk to everybody, go to the bar after the show.
Right. Know? Of course. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what everyone.
That's very similar to what I do.
Yeah.
You know, or try to do.
Yeah. Always, you know, went to tons of shows. Met lots of people, but also, Carnegie Mellon had a big drama program, and I knew a lot of actors that way, so met their friends, which leads to meeting, like, directors who end up doing film projects or TV projects or things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think about this, because this makes me very uncomfortable, is, you know, if you, going up to someone you don't know and being like, you don't know me, but I do this thing and I want something from you. Like, even if you don't say it just like that, like that's part of it. That's part of, you know, like whether you mean it in, you know, I'm not saying it's in any kind of like, you know, aggressive, like arrogant sort of way. It's just, but that's the reality, is like you have, the way that you meet a lot of people is being like, well, I kind of would like something from you.
Like, you mean in terms of, you
know,
like work?
In terms of work, or just like, hey, I, you know, I'd love to, you know, work with you, you know, in a writing capacity. I don't know. I like I said, I'm coming at this because I don't really know how that community works, you know, and like, I'm just interested in just like what you did.
I mean, I don't think it's a lot of, at least what I don't find it to be particularly effective to go about it that way. Like, okay. I kind of feel like people work with their friends.
Right.
You know?
So you got to be, so you become friends.
So it's, yeah, it's, and it's really, I think, a lot easier than people think. It's like, if you know someone's doing a show, go to their show and, like, people appreciate it.
Yeah,
you
that's definitely true.
Yeah, and, like, especially when we're not talking about, like, a recital at Carnegie Hall, where, yeah, you know, who's there? Like, if you're in a crowd of, like, 15 people watching someone play, like...
Yeah, it's hard to get lost in the crowd at a place like Spectrum or any of those kind of venues.
And people notice and they appreciate it. Not mm-hmm. saying you should just go to these things just to, you know, kiss of ass. Course. I'm sorry, I'm assuming if you're trying to do this, you're actually, like, right. going to things like this. Yeah, but, you know, just go to things. I think people notice and they appreciate it. And, you know, at some point down the line, someone's like, you know, one of their friends is talking about eating a Bowser for something.
Right.
You know, you get referred.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I don't think I've, you know, I've tried to get, like, composition work on, like, Mandy and Craigslist and things like that. You know, someone posting an ad about needing a composer for a short film. But, like, I honestly don't think I've ever gotten a job that way. Whereas, like, more often than not, I've gotten jobs from, like, you know, being at a bar, which is a common theme for me, and, you know, finding, you know, meeting someone and then meeting their friends, and then mm-hmm. it all kind of comes around. And
So I just in my brain I have this thing that says, oh, it has to be, like, super different. It's just
hanging out
at a bar, just like every other musician.
Yeah, I think, like, I'm not sure what percentage I'd give it. I'd say, like, maybe hanging out at the bar is about, like, 40-60 hanging out at bar practicing. Like, what's right. a bar? In terms of what actually leads to projects.
Man. Hashtag New York musician.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always think about, like, because I grew up in the South, and, you know, you see musicians and composers who live in the South, and I'm like, Augusta or mm-hmm. Savannah or Tallahassee. I'm like, how do you live? Like, how do you ever, like, there's only 300 of you. How do you, like, ever get anything if you're not a member of that community already? But New York is just, like, so everyone's just always drinking. So how long have you been in the city?
I've been in the city since, I should know this, 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not, you know, not super long. And so, I mean, you mentioned you have a day job.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I'm a music assistant for Philip Glass. So I work with him.
Right. Someone told me that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I
don't remember who it was, but someone was like, oh, yeah, I know this dude. He's, like, the assistant for Philip Glass. His name's Alex. I'm like, I don't think I just made that connection, like, literally just now.
Yep, but that's me. So I work at his publishing office.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's, I think there's, like, six of us mm-hmm. who work there. So I'm the music assistant. There's a copyist. And then there's, like, admin. So it's, like, yeah. So me and the copies, but, like, score prep and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, I can't just, like, you know, ignore that. I do have to go down that road. So in a situation like that, like how, I mean, well, this dude's obviously one of the titans of 20th century American music.
Yeah.
I mean, like any, on any list, he's in the top three, at least top five, you know.
Yeah,
as far as innovators and as far as innovators go, so, like, how, like, do you, you know, how, I guess, is, you know, how does your relationship to him work? I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's he's a cool dude to work for.
Yeah,
he's,
how old is he? Nice.
He's 70. He's 78.
I just, why don't I think? I think I always think he's, like, 95, but he's, yeah, like, 78 is a totally reasonable age to be still work composing. You know.
Yeah, well, they're still planning all the, like, 80th birthday concerts. Well, they're doing, course, like, you know, this Carnegie Hall festival and okay. things like that. Yeah, no, I mean, he's super cool. What I actually end up doing for him kind of varies
mm-hmm.
from project to project.
Of course.
You know, it's like, right now we're doing his 11th symphony.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is really more, like, copy work intensive. So I'm mainly helping the copyist
mm-hmm.
there, you know, like, get it, well, the scores in order, doing note entry, which isn't, like, the most fun part of the job.
Right.
But it has to be done. I mean, there's also other times if we're doing, like, a film score, like, we have another movie coming up, that is like, when something like that happens, I make all the MIDI demos and things for the director, and then do the recording sessions in whatever capacity for the film.
Right. Oh, right. It was Ben who told me that, because he came in to do some recording stuff, maybe.
Yeah, he did. He played on a commercial that
we did. Yeah. Okay, so that makes sense. everything's like, all the pieces are like falling into place in my brain. There's not much I need to say about Philip Glass. Like, everything's been said. But as far as you personally, like, how, you know, are there, like, what, you know, working in that capacity, you know, what kind of things do you glean from being in proximity to a dude like that when it comes to, I mean, your own music, sure, but just like how you function as a composer, like, you know, career wise or just like process wise or maybe music wise. I don't know if that,
I mean, it's definitely, whether I want it to or not.
Yeah, there's no way it can't affect
it's
you.
It definitely, like, has become, you know, it's definitely found its way into my musical language, whether I want it to or not. I mean, it's not like
I mean, you're not his student, so, like, no, that's, I'm not. So, like, that's, I mean, it's different, but, yeah, like, right.
I mean, you know, I can send him pieces and things, and he'll check it out and usually be like, cool, and that's, you know. it's not like, we don't, like, you know, work super tight.
Right, I just mean, like, seeing, I'm not saying, like, in a collaborative sort of way, I'm just, like, seeing how he goes about, like, what he does, you know, like, what effect does that have on what you do?
Well, I mean, it's been very, I mean, honestly, the things that I think I've gotten the most out of having my position there is, you know, partially seeing how he runs his publishing company, because, mm-hmm. you know, he isn't on, like, Shermer or, well, I mean, there's a relationship there, but, like, you know, he's not, like, managed by this thing. Like, he owns his company, mm-hmm. you know, which I don't think really any other composer has that set up.
Well, I would imagine most composers, like, it wouldn't be realistic because they're not, I mean.
Or, you know, they'll be on, like, you know, they'll have a manager at, you know,
at
William Morris or whatever, right. Something like that. You know, his manager works in our office, mm-hmm. like, his lawyer works in our office. Like, we.
It's all in one house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And honestly, the thing that I think I've learned a lot from having this position is just, like, I mean, less music things and more
business.
Not even business thing, just, like, how do you run a recording session? Like, how do you get people to listen to you when you need to get this done? Like, how do you, you know, that kind of experience has been gotten from that.
Of course, because, like, I mean, obviously listeners can't see this, and we kind of joked about it before we started recording, but you have this huge setup in your part, you know, in your loft, and you know, and, like, it just, like, you know, learning how to run your own thing is so important because, well, it's you who does all of your stuff, your own stuff, you know. I mean, this is a theme that comes up a lot when I'm talking to people, younger musicians who are doing all their own stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to know so much more about how to do things than you would have maybe in the past. You have to know how to, like you said, run a recording session or similar things.
I mean, you know, I've been able to be privy to projects that I wouldn't, you know, able to get into the room for
of course.
If I wasn't here. You know, with, like, you know, we just worked on, like, a Broadway show, which is, I think, still running.
Which show?
It's the revival of The Crucible.
It closed, I think, last month.
Did it?
Yeah, because I walked by the Arthur Miller, I think, on the way to the Union. So
I feel like I should have known that. So I did. You know, I worked on the recording session for the stuff that was pre-recorded, The music was, like, pre-recorded and processed. So
right.
I had to work on that, and also the cast sang a bunch of, like, hymns, and so I rehearsed them, so that was really cool to get to work with people like that. And, you know, I wouldn't see this if I didn't have this position, so it's cool to get to work on that.
Yeah, so I mean we could, like, continue just, like, talking about that, but that's not that's an interesting part of like how your career, though. I think it's really cool, and I'm sure there's literally thousands of musicians across the country who would, like, maybe not kill, but severely maim for something that.
I mean, I'm glad I have it, but ultimately it's...
Ultimately it is a stepping stone.
Yeah, ultimately it's, you know, here until I'm
of course
writing.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, yeah, and sure. It's just, you know, so many people have to take jobs that are not music related.
Yeah,
and that can't necessarily help their careers.
Yeah, well, I mean, he actually made a joke when I first started working with him. He said something. You know, my wording's not going to be
right
exactly the same, but he said something just like, you know, like, we all need a day job when we're starting out. Like, I had to drive cab until I was 40. You know, you have to work for me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, I have it way better than you did. Yeah. Like, well, this is much better than driving cab.
Morton Feldman worked in a Chinese laundry until he was like in his, you know, in his 30s.
Yeah.
You know, while he was hanging out with like John Cage at night.
Yeah.
He's like working in a laundromat. Anyway, so, excuse me. So when it comes to your own music, mm-hmm. yeah, enough about your lame day job.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, let's move on.
What?
I said, yeah, let's move on from that.
When it comes to your own kind of thing, like we touched on at the top, just kind of how, like the different things that you do are not, there are obviously, it's not, oh, I'm going to do this thing and then I'm going to do this completely separate mm-hmm. thing and they're going to be completely apart.
Yeah.
There's these threads that kind of go across, all of your different, you know, your different projects. So if you were on the outside, kind of like looking at the things that you do compositionally, like, I guess, and this is going to sound a little bit canned, like a canned question, but you know, what do you kind of, how would you kind of describe like what it is that you, you know, you do, like maybe some of your, maybe like what your earmarks are that you kind of like see as these tropes that kind of pop up in all of your music. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I just mean,
no,
like you know, the flourishes is a better word, like Alex Weston flourishes. Like, I mean, what are the kind of things that you just always, you always are wanting to come back to in your music?
Oh man, that is a,
it's I don't know.
It's a good question. It's hard to answer.
Yeah. Because it's like, you're so close to it that it's hard to, like, I don't know. I'm just curious.
What I would, I mean, I think stylistically, there definitely is, I think, a minimalist influence in my music, and that's been there since before I had my day job.
Right.
I think one thing that I try to do, and I hope comes across in my music, is I do, when I'm writing, try to find harmonic language from, you know, a more, I mean, I'm a very much a tonal
mm-hmm.
composer, you know, yeah. Not doing anything particularly dissonant. Like, I like my consonances. But I don't know. I try to grab extended harmonies and things from my, which I think is very informed from how much time and how intensely I did study jazz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I generally gravitate towards, you know, very thick, like lush voicings and
yeah.
things. It's very much, you know, how I write and how I orchestrate is very, very thick and very fleshed out that way. I don't know. It's a difficult.
I always am curious to hear like people. it's funny. I always like hearing artists describe their art.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, because I don't know. It's because there's just a different. It's just a different perspective of like how the artist picks out what they do themselves. Well, I mean, who are your guys, like, as far as, whether it's a direct influence or not, like, even if you don't take anything but perhaps one voicing from someone else's, you know, someone else's work, how a horn relates to an oboe, you know,
mm-hmm. Gotcha.
As an example, like, you know, who are your guys, like, what's kind of, like, your go-to listening? I mean, and I'm not talking about classical, I'm talking, like, straight across, like any music.
I mean, in terms of classical, you know, I'm not gonna try to answer this too broadly and be like the number one. I'll just give you.
Oh no!
I'll just give you things that I've been digging on lately. I think
perfect.
That'd be an easier.
That's perfect.
Instead of giving this like grand royal, like this is the pedestal.
I don't do grand royal. Yeah, I do informal and fun.
Yeah,
try.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, lately I've been binging on a lot of Steve Reich.
Okay.
I think orchestrationally, I've been sort of recently learning a lot from looking at sort of this from like Nico Muhly, which is sort of, you know, a very unavoidable force. And
in 2016 in New York, you can't get away from the powerhouse that he's become.
Yeah, well, my company also represents him. Oh, so it's like, so seeing like, you know, some of his, I don't work with him, but like, right, seeing his scores and things like that
has been, can look, take a pee.
Yeah, it's been pretty informative. In terms of not classical music recently, I think one of my all-time favorite pop musicians is Sufjan Stevens.
Of course.
I am a huge fan of him. Being a trombone player, I don't know if you saw Planetarium. Did you see that at BAM?
No, I didn't.
That was a collaboration between Nico, Sufjan, and Bryce Dessner from the National. And it was like the three of them, drums, string quartet, and seven trombones.
Here's the thing. First off, how am I completely unfamiliar with this? Second, how do I not know all seven trombone? I'm sure I do know all seven trombone players to do it.
I think another mutual connection. I think Sebastian Vera was part of it. I'm pretty sure.
Okay,
he was,
that makes sense. So it was.
I think he was in it.
Yeah, that makes sense. He comes back to New York for those things.
Yeah,
love Sebastian.
Yeah, great guy. Also lately, I've found myself listening to a lot more electronic music than I used to. Anyways, you know,
it's become unavoidable because it's become so much easier to make, and that comes with a lot of shit. But also, like, you have people with voices that they might not have been able to afford to have.
Oh yeah, well, I wouldn't even say from a matter of practicality, just from what you can do with you know, these timbres.
There's so many things you can do.
Yeah, and you know, I don't mean like in like a Stockhausen music concrete kind of thing, you know. I've been into these very, like, I mean, this is a stylistic thing, which is why I get along well with Ben Brody. You know, I'm into these very lush drone,
yeah, like this kind of stuff that he does with Flow State is very much what you're talking about, it seems.
Yeah. And in terms of guys like that, I've been listening to guy producers under the name Baths that I really like. Was listening today to Julia Holter. I really liked her record.
I'm not familiar with her.
Yeah, she's a really great. She's one of those people who straddles the like pop, classical line.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to use the term indie classical because I kind of hate that term.
When I was looking, I think I was looking for like how best to get a hold of you, and I saw you tweet something about that. I think recently, like against indie classical. Someone, it might have been you. It might have been someone else, but I don't know. Anyway,
just about the term.
Yeah, just about the term. How much someone hated the term indie classical. But
there was an article on New Music Box the other day where I forget who wrote it. It was one of the guys from New Amsterdam wrote it. I think. And it was I think I like retweeted it. It was
maybe okay, that might have been
like
a
whole diatribe on.
Well, okay.
Classical as a
actually, I'm interested. I'm interested in this topic. We're gonna circle back on and talk some more about your different projects, but. Just from a cultural standpoint, like what is, you know, what is this like proliferation? How do you see this proliferation of what's called indie classical music? I'm not sure exactly how to define it because it's weird. It's like one of those amorphous terms that just started getting slapped on these composers who do like more tonal kind of like pop classical type of deals.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the indie classical label is often applied to people who are trying to do this sort of hybrid pop classical thing, you know, doing this classical music that's like informed by the pop influences because it's unavoidable and
like, right. Like, and there's no reason.
And if you like it,
there's no reason not to do it. Yeah.
And there's people who do it, I think, brilliantly, like Missy Mazzoli.
Of course, she's incredible.
Victoire, her group. But you know, there's other times I'll hear pieces and I'm not gonna name any names where like you'll hear a piece and then like there's just very clearly a like this is the pop part and there's just like, you know, because there'll be like a bass drum doing a four on the floor and you're like, you know, like, oh, this is dumb,
yeah,
you know, like it's like this isn't organic, this is
okay,
you know what I mean? It's like as much as I mentioned him as one of my guys, like I thought the Steve Reich radio rewrite thing. I didn't really.
Yeah.
I didn't really. Didn't really go for that. It just sort of feels like I don't know. It's like, I think, and to answer this selfishly and talk about myself, which I guess is the point.
That's the point.
Interviewing
yeah.
me. when you talked about like the different things that I do, it's I think that, like you should just make. This is gonna sound so. Like contrived, but just like make good things. Like if you're,
yeah.
you shouldn't be like, all right, I'm trying to work in my pop into my classical, or it's like, oh, I'm writing electronic now, and now it's got to keep my strings out of that, you know, or like right. whatever you're approaching it. I think you need to approach, and I think a lot of the things that are described as like indie classical is very much like, I think it's like limiting, and I think it's sort of forcing something in. It's like, I sort of have this issue in general with a lot of. I'm not sure this is a term, but like over genrefication, sort of. It's right. like, it's like I don't really listen to this kind of music, but you hear people who are really into like house music or mm-hmm. like techno, where it's like, well, hard house is chord note 118 and saw step is chord note 112, and you're like, so, like, how do you say you're like oh, you're a hard house artist, so everything is this tempo and like this kind of drum beat, you know? It's just like this like. Pigeonholing
yeah
that like well, doesn't need to exist. Like if indie classical is, and I mean someone might disagree with my description of it being this sort of sure. hybrid world, you know, I mean there's people who are doing it really well also mm-hmm. like besides her, there's also like, you know, Gabriel Kahane
mm-hmm. yeah he's
and his stuff and so he's good. He's great. And you also have like, you know, I mean look at when Nico works with Sigaros or mm-hmm. works with like Sam Amadon, it's like, is that like, that's not indie classical, that's just something good.
It's just good. Well, yeah. it this is like that I keep we kind of keep running back into it with, you know, what you were talking about when it with your own music about everything, not things not being pigeonholed. No, this, you know, sure, I'm gonna call this like, oh, this is a pop thing that I wrote,
yeah,
but everything comes together in a way that's,
yeah.
that's, you know, ideally unique.
And,
you
I'm, and I'm not, and I'm not trying to make this pretentious point of being that I'm genreless. Like my,
I figured it
my
out.
My pop is my classical, and my yeah, and my films are my soul, and I don't know whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think there. I mean, there is a delineation, of course. You know, if I'm doing a song, it's still a.
Yeah,
there's still a song.
There's gonna be things like it's gonna be 3 to 4 minutes long, and
yeah, yeah, you know, and then you know, I'm still, if I'm doing concert music, it's still a string quartet, still a string quartet, still a string quartet.
Of course,
you know. I'm just saying, I think that's my issue with.
Okay. Yeah, I. You know, it's not something I've really had the opportunity to talk to someone about. So I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
Just when it comes down to it, I just like talking to people about music, man.
Totally.
So. Excuse me. When it comes, you've had the opportunity over the past few years to do a number of projects for television and for film. Mm-hmm. I saw you've done some stuff for PBS.
Mm-hmm.
You've done some stuff for The Affair on Showtime.
Yeah.
That great show where McNulty fights with Pacey.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's the Wire Dawson's Creek mashup that we always wanted. God, that's so dumb.
No, I like it. It's good.
As well as some Sundance films, correct?
Yeah. I had a film there.
Okay.
I was on there a couple years ago.
Okay. Right. so I in the past, a lot of times, you know, you look at composers, and generally those communities have been fairly separate.
Yeah,
I would say. Correct me if I'm wrong. So you've got like guys, of course. I mean, just to name check the guy, you've got guys like John Williams who write predominantly film music, and yeah, you know, he writes concert music that gets programmed because he's John Williams, but you know. The public at large is going to want to go hear Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, you know, the Silk Road. or whatever, you know, one of his other pieces.
Or like, or the Danny Elfman saxophone concerto.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably a better example.
That's a real piece, by the way.
I've not heard it. I've just seen it listed. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. it's not bad. It just sounds like Danny Elfman.
Right. But then you've got guys like let's say John Adams or whoever. It's you know, sure, sometimes his music is used in films, but you know, predominantly we're talking about a concert hall type of art. So now, in 2016, in the 21st century, those lines, again, like these lines, we keep talking about these lines being blurred. Thank you, Robin Thicke. But
I was trying to think of a way to make that joke. So yeah. Thank you for doing it.
But, how do you, you know, when it comes to your own personal writing, you know, do you think about, How does your process differ? I guess is probably the best way to ask this question. Like, when it comes to writing another string quartet, or doing pieces, like how do you approach them differently? Because you have to.
Oh, definitely. You know. you definitely have to approach TV and film differently, because that's an instance where you're coming. You're one of the last things to happen.
Right.
You're part of the post-production. You have, at 42 seconds, you know, and this needs to happen, and then this needs to sync up, and you have these really clear guidelines. And, you know, so, like, I mean, different projects require
different touches.
And, I mean, also, like, and not to sell a project short, but, you know, like, there's a time to really pull, like, you know, a more artistic, creative muscle. Creative thing. And there's times when, like, you know, when you're, this is more so in film, when it's, you know, you're making something for something else. It's like, you know,
right.
Sometimes you're the architect and sometimes you're like the house painter, you know, it's like, need to, here I'm doing what will make their product like feel the best and as best as I can. And sometimes, you know, when in The Affair, there are times when that was me holding down like a synth pad for 45 seconds with like one chord.
Exactly. And,
you know, because that's all it needed.
Yeah.
And
you
it's what they wanted.
You know, when you're in a six, when you're looking at a 60 minute television episode, there's so much, you know, just from a filmmaking or storytelling point of view, there's so much you have to get through in a short period of time that it's kind of just, well, we need something. You know, like, no, you know, you need some sort of underpinning to heighten, to like accent tension or whatever it is. But I would imagine in film, you're asked to provide like a base work for a scene more often. Am I incorrect in that? It depends on the project.
I'm not so sure. I guess that you're making.
Well, I don't know how it is. I don't know how it is now. I don't know how it's different in indie filmmaking. But you know, movies have themes, and in television you have the theme that's on the credits.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is kind of just incidental. There's exceptions, like the guy who, God, I can't remember his name. The guy who writes who does all the music for Mr. Robot, is very specific voice within the show, but that's by design. I think I just like spun myself off into a circle, and I want to get back to what we were talking about.
I think what you're getting at. I don't think it's that, you know, the music for television is. I don't think it's the case that it's like, okay, well, we need something. I don't think it's
okay.
Like quite that.
Sure, please correct me.
No, I mean it's. because trust me, I had like everything I wrote for The Affair. They like the. Producers or the head composer, I was an additional writer,
right.
And that, you know, it took rewrites and rewrites. Even if it was like a 45 second sex scene, there'd be like 9 versions before it got through, you know.
They were
very particular.
I keep like wanting to like go down these little rabbit trails as we go through this, but like how does that work? Like, I mean, 9 times, like what kind of notes do you get on that?
I mean, you know, it could for, you know, like, I'll use the example of scoring a sex scene for a show called The Affair. It's like, you know, you would write something like, you know, simple and like, you know, pretty because they're you know making love or whatever, and then they'll just be like, yeah, but they're cheating on their spouse, so we need more emotional tension, and now it needs to be darker. Uh-huh. And you know, you do something like that, and then it'd be like, well, this is now entirely too dark, and now we have to rein it back in.
But he's not murdering her with his dick.
Yeah. So it's like you know, it's like, because I guess my initial approach was just like, I'm going to do something pretty and, you know, sexy, and they want something evil and sexy. You know.
That's really funny.
Even something like that. And I mean, in terms of whether film is more particular, I mean, you know, it also entirely depends on the project. You know, that movie I had that was at Sundance that you mentioned, just this movie called H, which was like a lot more. Like, the score for that was very particular and very, very interesting and very different. You know, I worked pretty closely with the director, and he was a very hands-on, very particular director. Mm. And, you know, we got to do this really cool, very, like, sparse, minimalist-y kind of thing. Like, if you checked out the trailer for it on the website, like, that was, except for the arrow pair piece at the end, like, that's, like, one of the themes that was from the movie.
Okay, cool.
And, you know, like, the last feature I did was a documentary that was, you know, I wrote an hour of, like, you know, there'd be, like, 10 minutes of Motown grooves, and then 10 minutes of, you know, now we need, like, a techno track, and now a disco track. So, you know, it's, you can't, I don't think you can really say whether one medium requires one, whether how they regard the music that is actually going into the program.
Sounds like fun.
It is fun.
Doing like that many different things for one project.
That was a really fun project. Yeah.
you get to scratch all of the different itches that you have that can't necessarily always shove. You know, you can't shove everything into a concert piece.
Yeah. So that was a fun little. That was a fun little experiment. Like just doing all of these different.
Yeah. What was the documentary about?
About the group, the Guardian Angels. You know, those guys who like patrolled the subway.
Oh.
Yeah. It was a documentary about like their founding and.
Well, that's things really like interesting. That.
Yeah, it was cool.
That sounds cool.
I don't know what's happening with it, but I'll let you know. It's still, you know, it's been on for like a month, so I don't know where it's going or what's happening.
Nice.
So, you know, cause, I mean, that, you know, that group started in like the 70s. You had to have like the 70s funk thing with the vintage footage, you know, so like stuff like that.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with 1970s New York. I mean, it's not just me. I mean, there's a lot of people who are into it because it's such an, like I said, such an explosive time in the city. And I live in the South Bronx, which was like the war zone in the 70s. So anyway, unrelated. So we talk about like, you know, film TV things. So how... before we get back to some more concert oriented stuff, like the last question I really have about the TV film stuff is like working with a time limit, how does that affect your writing, like when you're not necessarily doing some sort of there is artisticness that goes into everything that someone does with music or should. But when we're talking about like, well, we need this, and they're gonna, you know, they'll tell you what you need. But like, when it comes to, oh, I need to do this now, and I have this amount of time to do it. Like, how does that affect you? You know, I mean, I don't know if it's pressure or.
You say amount of time. Do you mean like, at 45 seconds, this has to happen, or do you mean like there's a deadline?
Well, both, really. Now that you bring up the first, I was thinking the deadline.
You think deadline?
I was thinking deadline, but like, I mean, sure, both. Like, I mean, I know, like, there's, I took one film scoring class, so that makes me an expert. But you know, I know there's things that you can do to fill up time, you know, or you know that sometimes composers use little tricks to, you know, to fill the time, in addition to like making something that they like. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. But I was thinking more of like, oh, well, we need this by this point of time, and you need to come up with something.
I mean, it depends on the project.
Okay.
That the movie H that I mentioned was very much like, we are taking 3 months, and we are making it like what he wants. You know, like that was very much that kind of experience. The Affair was 4 days from getting the cut to being done.
Okay.
So it's like we got the cut on Sunday. We had to be done on Thursday. it aired 10 days later, like next episode Sunday, done by Thursday. So like that was like 10 weeks of a lot of 2 a.m. nights, you know, because, you know,
was it for the whole second season or first season?
I worked on both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
I didn't do every episode in the second season because, you know, at a certain point they have cues that they can reuse from earlier,
of course,
right, parts. So yeah, it starts out, both seasons started out with a ton of work and gradually tapered off, yeah, until by, you know, episode 12 they were just like, eh, we're just gonna,
we'll just kind of reuse some shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was, I think, the craziest turnaround I've ever had.
But like, is it like, is it difficult to like produce on demand when I think the cultural idea of a composer is like the guy in his studio just kind of waiting for, or working and trying to find inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I don't write that way.
Okay, well, sure.
And I honestly think that, you know, like writing is, and I guess creativity is a muscle in a way, you know, and I'm the first one to phrase it that way. Like, if you get used to, if you know that you have to write, you write, and you know, you work, and you can get it done. I think if we were all sitting around waiting, for inspiration to strike, we would never get anything done or get anything written, which also, like, not to get too much off a tangent, but I don't, like, generally believe that happens very often. Like, I don't think anyone's in the shower and it's just like, peace! And, you know, and then you jump out of the shower and write it all down dripping with water and soap. You know, it's, writing is work. Writing is, you know, you're sitting down and, you know, you could have like a 5-note thing that as you start playing it on the piano becomes
something,
this whole thing, and then, you know, over the process of doing that, you throw out what you started with and something like that. So, you know, if I know that I have like a day to finish, you know, 9 minutes of things, it's like, okay, I'm going to start with the simple piano thing, and then it's like, oh, I'll add it with strings, now fuck that piano and take that out, you know, it's
okay, yeah.
it's an evolving process, it's, you know, writing, writing and drafting and it's, restructuring. And,
it's just like any other kind of work, it's fucking work.
Yeah, it's, and I
do it.
And I mean, it's, I don't, not to sound like unromantic or too like practical about it, but like, yeah, I mean, if you have a deadline, like, meet the deadline. Yeah, it's not. It's if you need to.
What?
No, I mean, like,
we're breaking new ground.
No, I mean, like, even in terms of writing, it's like you can't sit around and wait, or else you're not going to get hired again. Like, you have to. I mean, and it's a skill that you can develop, is to be able to be like, you know, I have to write. I can make this.
You can make happen.
And it's not even like what can I, you know, pulling at orange rinds or like I don't. I hope I don't think I have any like tricks, you know, like, I
okay,
don't, you know, I don't think I have any go-to, like, you know, this then is my, there's... I have a minute to fill kind of thing. You know, I mean, there's always the general, you know, if you're doing a drama or something, just like a very simple pad or something like that. But oftentimes that's not something that's just like phoned in and it's like, oh, we need a tone here. It's like, if the little trick is having a 1-note drone, like, if that's what the scene needs,
that's
like,
what it needs.
Yeah, there's no, like, I don't think there is like a, I can fill time with this.
Okay,
you know, because it's all, if it's just you filling time with it, it doesn't work. Like, you still have to.
Of course, no, I I didn't mean to like put you know, you anyway.
No, I know you're not.
Yeah,
what you're saying.
So, you know, I think that provides a decent segue into just like talking some more about you know, the stuff that you write, you know, on, I don't know, on your own. I mean, I'm sure you know you get commissions and such, right? is that how being a composer works? People ask you to write stuff? No.
I mean, I don't really have a ton of, you know, I don't have a ton of like classical commissions in a lot of ways that I mean, not that I don't want them, but
if you're listening and you want a classical piece, he'll write you one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do write a lot of classical music.
Right. But
oftentimes it's, you know, like some string quartet and wherever isn't reaching out and asking me for things. You know, in terms of like actual commissions, probably like, you know, 3 to 5 a year and
okay,
things
well,
like
I,
that
right.
come down the pipe, which I love doing. But like, I, you know, I know that I'm not, and I don't particularly want to be the, like, you know, I have my, like, you know, this symphony here and this, I mean, that'd be cool, but like I don't think that's really how I want to work. Cause I like working at all these different things. So I don't think that's really something that I'm going to do, nor something that I'm particularly striving for. Most of the like writing that I've done for me is like, you know, doing a lot of like self-started projects and things like that. You know, like me and Ben did like a song cycle concert thing where, you know, each wrote a 40-minute song cycle that we did, you know, and then did the concert of that. And actually Ben and I and this other composer are like in the process of forming a like production presentation like organization, which we're sort of in the early stages of forming. So
that makes sense. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, you know, and finding other composers that we like to work with and presenting their music and producing recordings and things like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's still super formative stages. So
yeah. You mean there's no website?
Yeah. Well, there's no name right now. So we're like I said, we're like, you know,
very very early stages. But
yeah, I mean, you were still like scouting people and picking names and doing that kind of thing.
So when you're talking about a lot of self-started types of things, like what. You know, we spent a decent chunk of time, you know, talking about, you know, how you worked with Earth More multimedia deals. But when you're looking at what you want to do next, like we've been talking, we just spent, you know, 5 minutes talking about like. You know, you don't wait around. You can't. You don't wait around for something to hit you in the shower. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like just writing the stuff that you want to write every night or whatever, how do you like just approach that? Do you have like just a stack of things that fragments that you've thought about before that you kind of expand on, or you know what is that different, you know, what does that separate process look like when it comes to just you doing what you want to do?
Well, I think I work best with a deadline. Like I work well with a deadline, and I work well with a goal. You know, I don't.
Sure.
I don't have.
It's so hard because if you don't have a goal,
it's impossible. For me, anyways.
Right. Well, if you don't have a goal, it's so much easier just to watch reruns of Law and Order.
Yeah,
it is to work.
Yeah, so much easier. And I know other people work this way, and I don't. You know, I don't have a stack of scores. You know, I don't have a string quartet I've been sitting on.
Right.
Because I wanted to write the string quartet, something like that. I work much more in terms of being like, okay, this is for like this project. We're doing a concert in February.
Gotcha.
We got to be done. You know, like right now, like in terms of writing things that I want to be doing, is I'm trying to work on a new. Solo EP project of just instrumental pieces, but that are I'm trying to do like a, you know, my current thing is I'm trying to do like a hybrid of my like more concert writing with some of this like electronic work that I've been getting into being more interested in through the film and through the pop music production. So I'm trying to sort of do a, you know, like a multimedia sort of, I'm trying to make like a little 30-minute album of just like an electronic piece with, you know, combining the organic and the electronic sounds and things like that. So,
cool.
You know, in terms of when I want to start writing, it's like, okay, well, I want that out in February. So, like, get to work.
Get off your ass.
Yeah, so I think, like, that's, I think, how I find myself. Because, like, I don't like writing to have it sit here so that I can hear it. You know, it's not just like, I'm making this for shits and giggles. Like, I'm doing this. It's like we're in the entertainment industry, you know. Like I want my things to be heard, and
And it doesn't do you or anyone else any good if it's sitting on your shelf over here.
Yeah. So I'm like working on that right now. Hopefully, my goal is to put that out the end of the year, maybe beginning of next year.
Cool.
Yeah. So I mean, that's like sort of how I work. Is I try to set, you know, specific things that we're trying to get done.
Do you have a favorite thing that you've done a lot of that you like? And I don't mean technique wise. I just mean like
like something I like
that you just like. It's like you're. It's something that you, I mean, do you have something that you don't need a deadline for where it's just like, this is, I love doing this. I never get tired of, music wise. I don't know.
Just to make for,
yeah.
Just make for fun.
Well, I mean, not necessarily just make for fun, but you know, something that you do like that you don't need a deadline to make yourself do.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I guess I should clarify. It's not like I like need a deadline to make myself do. Make...
That's fair.
Yeah. I don't like need it or I can't write.
Of course. That was a little bit binary.
I usually, to be honest, like I usually have something that I'm working on that needs to be finished. Like, so besides that EP that I'm working on, you know, I also like, have like a pop band with a friend of mine. So, you know, we are like 90% done with that record, which will be done in November.
Gotcha.
You know, we're like just about to get it mixed. So like, you know, I always have a thing that I'm working on, which I'm, you know, I'd say those two things are like my passion project right now.
Okay.
You know?
I guess, so it's like, yeah, that's, I mean, that, that is kind of what I was asking. I don't know. Like
one thing that I like don't do enough and I would love to do more of, if anyone is listening, or I mean, not, I know not right now. I know this isn't radio and it's not going out immediately. So
we're going to be hitting the phone line.
Yeah. And... So you right now at 6:25 on this Thursday. I haven't had a lot of experience, but like I did two projects with dance companies and I found that really rewarding. I actually really, really liked that experience. Which is actually how I know Salome is because I was commissioned for this ballet, the group called Mad Art Creative, which I think Ben's doing their one this year. And it was for percussion trio and piano. And so she was the pianist for that. So that was just a really cool experience to, you know, get to work on something like that. And then I had another, you know, piece for a dance company earlier this year that wasn't like a full ballet. This was just a, you know, an 8-minute thing that was part of a review. But yeah, that was like really rewarding. So I would love to do that again. I think it's really interesting about working with dancers is, and it's not like I'm like really into dance generally, you know, it's not like I like, but it was just, I mean, I really like it, but it's not something that I like, you know,
you're not up at night watching YouTube videos of different dance.
Yeah. Like I'm not like, I'm also very ignorant of the scene and need to know more about it. But like it's very interesting in that I found working with dance companies to be sort of like the opposite of working on a film, because like with a film, you know, everything's done when it comes to me and I'm being like, here you go, like, I spackled the walls and you know
and put that
I hung up some pictures so the wall's not so blank, you know, something like that. I'd say because with dance companies it's, you know, the music comes first and then it's just so
interwoven that,
and it's like, I mean, like the first time my experience was with that Mad Art ballet, which is a piece called Chroma, because like, you know, I wrote the piece, I gave it to them in January, and then didn't see anything else until like May, you know, because the choreographer had to work, the dancers had to learn it, had to learn it, and it was just a very cool experience to get to walk into a room and be like, there are six people, you know, adding to what I did, and performers who've done it, and now there's like a like lights that are designed for your piece, this, not the other way around. You know, it's just like.
So that's, I bet that's like, that's gotta be a really cool feeling.
Yeah, it's really interesting, which I realize happens in lots of forms of music, but I found it really.
Well, yeah, but that's lots of forms of music isn't your music.
No, and I just thought that was like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, rock bands with like, you know, lighting and shows and things like that, I'm sure that's also probably a comparable thing, but it was just really cool to like sit in the audience and just like see what like other people had taken what I did and made it like way better than what I had given them, you know what I mean?
Right. That's really cool.
So I really liked that and would like to do more of that.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun.
So, besides these, you know, the few projects that you've mentioned with, you know, in the record, what else do you have coming up in, you know, maybe the next 5 months?
Next 5 months.
So I don't know, like, cause this will come out probably early November.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, just like,
so I'm starting another movie in like a week. I'm supposed to. I'm not sure. We'll see. Yeah, I have a drama coming up, which will be cool because I like working on dramas.
Yeah.
More than comedies or documentaries. So I'm still waiting on the cut for that.
Okay.
But that's supposed to be pretty soon. Yeah, I'm supposed to get that next week.
what day is it?
Yeah, so I'm supposed to get that next week. So if that when that comes through,
yeah,
that'll be the next thing I'm writing, and that'll probably take probably about a month, maybe a little under a month for that one.
Okay, one last thing about the film stuff. How many times do you have to watch it before you like really lock into what you want to do with it? Like how, like if you're in a several month period, like how many times do you end up watching the movie?
I mean, like end to end.
Well, I mean, of course you're not watching it end to end because you're doing, or I don't know if you are.
I end to end once. And then whenever it screens, I'll go to that and see it again. But I mean, like, now it's you watch it once with the director, figure out what scenes need music, okay. And from there it's more just like watching the same
looping
scene.
Looping it 50 times.
50 times.
Okay, that's awesome. I was just curious. I didn't think of that earlier, and I was just like, I have to.
Yeah, which can be like, which can be really weird, because I remember like, there was some project that this was a film that Philip was working on, and there was like a scene where Nicole Kidman was getting strangled.
Oh, so
she's getting like murdered. And so just spending like 5 hours watching Nicole Kidman be strangled over and over again.
Oh God, that's awful.
Yeah, no, so
it's the worst.
You just leave in a really weird mood.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, that was it. I was just curious.
No, it's a good question. Yeah, so I mean, sometimes there's times when that becomes painful, but yeah. You can always mute the sound at a certain point. You don't, you don't like always need to be watching. Like, you know, you can get, find your hit points and then just work and be like,
okay.
Yeah, it's you're not just like, you know, staring at the screen, playing the piano.
All right. So you got a movie coming up, you know.
Yeah, I have that. I have with this organization I was talking about that I'm starting, this company that I'm starting, you know, we have, you know, a bunch of work to do for that, you know, so we're going to be starting a presenting concert starting in February.
Hmm.
So getting all of that
in
order is going to be a lot of work, even though that's not like creative work.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it is because I'm also part of this concert.
Right.
So I guess I am doing that.
Got to do the grunt work too, though.
Yeah, so I guess I got to do the business work on that. Yeah, I mean, I think that and the movie are like my writing for the next couple of months.
Awesome. All right, well, where can people find you?
Where can people find me?
I'm not going to give them your address. But.
I mean, if they want to listen to my things,
and find out what you're doing.
Yeah, you can just go to alexwestonmusic.com, or Twitter. But honestly, that's usually more stupid jokes than actual event promotion.
I mean, come on, let's be real. That's what Twitter's for.
Yeah, I don't have like an artist page on Facebook, but I don't know. Friend me. I'll send you events. I don't know if that's like weird. I'm just like advocating. They found me on Facebook. Go to the website.
Yeah.
The website has everything.
So don't friend him on Facebook, but go to the website.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably came out more awkward than I meant it to.
Hey.
Oh, and of course, and SoundCloud also. Yeah. I've, you know, soundcloud.com/AWeston.
Cool.
That's where you can find that.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, Alex, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for reaching out. This was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.